Welcome to you both. Just to clarify, Ms. Boehm, how do you pronounce your surname?
Boehm.
Boehm?
Boehm.
So you like an English pronunciation?
Yes.
Fair enough. Thank you and welcome.
So, as introduced, I'm David Arsenault, a senior water engineer with GHD, and joined for moral support by my colleague, Reiko Boehm. He's our team leader here in Palmy. Mm-hmm. Prepared a statement. I'll read through it. I imagine there's going to be a few questions just based on the discussion that we had with Mr. Murphy, so I have sufficiently girded my loins for your interrogation.
That's good.
Okay, so we will focus on highlighting to the panel any points of disagreement or outstanding matters that remain between ourselves and Kiwi Rail's experts, as per your direction, sir, at the conclusion of Kiwi Rail's testimony.
Yeah.
In particular, we're going to focus on the council proposed NOR conditions related to the stormwater management framework, as it was called. Interfaces between the stormwater evidence and those of ecology and landscape, as well as a few other little niche lingering issues.
Thank you.
As stated in our report and as identified in Mr. Leahy's presentation, we are generally in agreement with Kiwi Rail's assumptions and approach to sizing the stormwater detention ponds and treatment wetlands. We reached this agreement through an in-person meeting at council offices in June 2020 with Kiwi Rail, Stantec, GHD, PNCC, and Horizons Regional Council in attendance, along with follow-up emails, various discussions with Mr. Leahy and ourselves. The outcome of this process was the stormwater management framework, which was appended to Mr. Leahy's technical report. And our expectation at the time was that the stormwater management framework would play a fundamental role in all future consents and engineering reviews for the freight hub, for both city and regional councils, serving as a central document that would contain the sum total of stormwater information for the site. In our opinion, a comprehensive document such as the proposed stormwater management framework is the most effective and efficient way of navigating stormwater approvals for a site like the freight hub, and would avoid issues of having multiple documents for different stakeholders that address the same topic. The stormwater management report and stormwater management and monitoring plan, as they're referred to in the conditions, in our opinion, needlessly and confusingly fragment this stormwater information related to the freight hub. PNCC also does have an interest in stormwater management as it relates to the council-owned network, but also to other elements that may be affected by stormwater, which includes water quality, avoidance of natural hazards and damage to property, both public and private. This is evident in various provisions set forth in the district plan, eco-city strategy, asset management plans, and engineering standards. However, we do acknowledge that there is some jurisdictional overlap with regards to stormwater management between regional and territorial authorities. And here, especially the unique geographic location of the proposed freight hub, which sees stormwater discharged almost directly to the Mangoni Stream, which is a system that is managed by Horizons Regional Council, without passing through PNCC or any other infrastructure. And as such, I consider that Kiwi Rail's proposed stormwater conditions will be generally appropriate, subject to, again, this following qualification, that since Kiwi Rail is proposing to deal with detailed stormwater management design as part of the Horizons One Plan consenting process, I consider it appropriate to be clear that those assets that are necessary to service the freight hub or to address its effects are constructed, operated, and maintained in perpetuity by Kiwi Rail. Accordingly, so I also offer a revised condition that I believe was put to Kiwi Rail this week. I'm not quite sure how that discussion turned out, but generally saying the requiring authority must design, construct, operate, and maintain all devices that accept, convey, detain, and treat stormwater to and from the freight hub site, including for the actual stormwater generated from the freight hub site, stormwater redirected through or around the site, which would include the proposed culverts through the site, as well as stormwater from roading and other structures constructed as part of the freight hub and in PNCC ownership. So that would be any sort of internal public roads, a perimeter road around the site, so on. So that sort of ties up our position on the conditions and jurisdictional overlap. And then moving on, there are two important interfaces between the ecological landscape and stormwater disciplines that need to be clarified and which inform the statements of Ms. Quinn and Ms. Whitby on the Council's reporting team. The first interface relates to the function of stormwater treatment wetlands and their suitability as a mitigation for ecological and landscape effects. This interface was discussed in our evidence report, but it's important to reiterate here, considering statements from Kiwi Rail's experts. Stormwater treatment wetlands do not provide the same suite of functions and benefits that natural wetlands provide. And you can really find these key differences in the hydrology and water quality of both types of wetlands. Treatment wetlands, by design, receive runoff from urban areas. This type of runoff arrives quickly and intensely from their serviced areas, resulting in frequent, rapid fluctuations in water levels. As well, the proposed wetlands will be co-located within the detention facilities, which are typically designed to accommodate water levels of up to several meters in depth. And I understand that Kiwi Rail's facilities are quite large and deep. These water levels in the detention facilities will then therefore also be present in the treatment wetlands and will require careful selection of vegetation within the wetlands to ensure they are resilient to this extreme inundation. An improved configuration to provide added ecological benefits would be to have the treatment wetland separated from the detention facility to moderate the water levels in the wetlands. However, even if separated, aquatic organisms present in the treatment wetland would still be frequently disturbed by the water level fluctuations, and the ecological value would remain limited. These wetlands are also purpose-built to clean contaminated runoff from developed areas before discharging into the natural environment, essentially serving as a large filter to trap urban stormwater contaminants. These contaminants remain in the wetland and accumulate over time in the wetland soils and plants. Eventually, these fill up the wetland and they need to be removed. Typically, these sediments, by the point that you're removing them, need to be disposed of at landfills due to the composition of the accumulated contaminants. This requires extensive disturbance to the wetland soils and plants, essentially resetting it to its original condition so it can have another 10, 15, 20 years, however long the design life was, of effective performance. It's therefore important to understand the dual purpose that Kiwi Rail are trying to meet with the proposed wetlands, and this explanation is just intended to provide a bit of useful context as to the ecological potential of the proposed stormwater treatment wetlands. The second interface is the practicality of constructing and maintaining the proposed culverts in a manner that will allow for fish passage. Just for a bit of context, I have a professional engineering background in stream restoration, aquatic habitat restoration, and fish passage assessment through my previous work in Canada, in addition to my experience in stormwater management generally. As discussed in our evidence report, there are practical limitations to providing fish passage on the scale of the culverts that have been proposed by Kiwi Rail under the site, such as that the interior of the culvert will be permanently dark without appropriate design or mitigation, which can be a little bit impractical to achieve. And this may impact the behavior of fish species and their willingness to pass through the entire length of the culvert. This may, in turn, limit the effectiveness of the culvert in terms of the overall proportion of fish which succeed at passing through the culvert relative to the total amount making the attempt. It suggests that the current level of connectivity may not be entirely maintained post-construction and that some amount of off-site compensation could be required as a result of the proposed activity. And I believe Ms. Quinn will be covering some of this discussion in a little bit more detail in her evidence. But generally, I think it's just that, well, there is no doubt that some fish will be able to pass through. It's whether or not as many fish that are trying could actually pass through or will want to pass through a 600-meter plus long dark tube, I guess. The ability of any authority to effectively maintain fish passage conditions within a culvert of these lengths will also be limited. Provisions for maintenance access should be included when these culverts are designed, such that inspections and maintenance can be carried out in a manner that is safe and cost-effective. I think you can sort of picture the problem if you have a simulated stream within a culvert 300 meters deep. It's a little tricky to be able to get in there and move around some potentially large rocks or sediment or accumulated woody debris, something like that. So that ties up the two interfaces with the ecological and landscape evidence. And there's just two kind of final points that we made a recommendation in our evidence report for a robust assessment of the erosion effects of the freight hub, which is in paragraph 112 of their original report. In Mr. Leahy's statement to the commissioners, he indicated that since no established methodology for such an assessment has been formalized in New Zealand, or something similar to that, that it should not form a condition of the NOR because we wouldn't be able to determine if they had basically successfully met the condition. We disagree and suggest that rather than simply not requiring the work, that QRail and the relevant approving authorities should agree on a suitable methodology that will be carried out, drawing on established international standards as needed. We believe that in general, the potential erosion effects have been understated in QRail's assessment of effects, including potential effects during the construction period. However, again, we also acknowledge the potential jurisdictional overlap on this issue and will trust that this matter will be resolved through regional consents as well. Finally, some of the submissions, including the evidence presented by Mr. Gore and Mr. O'Reilly, discuss the existing flooding concerns and QRail not directly acknowledging, as far as we are aware, the existing environment in terms of flood risk. This was further reinforced during the hearing through presentation of photos of recent flooding in the NOR area from several submitters. The proposed stormwater mitigation will need to consider the any sort of downstream hydraulic conditions and an appropriate return event, as well as the impacts of the loss of floodplain storage volume resulting from construction of the freight hub site, so as to not create or worsen flooding to other properties. The results of this assessment would not be expected to impact the NOR area, but may indicate the requirement, for off-site mitigation or protection of properties made vulnerable to flooding by construction of the freight hub, again, if any. And again, we acknowledge the jurisdictional overlap here and trust this issue will be resolved through regional consents, as it really should be. But just wanted to reinforce that here, especially in light of the flooding photos from a couple weeks ago. That concludes the statement, so happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Arsenault. Just a moment. Commissioner Pamari.
Tēnā kōrua. Thank you both very much for appearing this morning to present your summary. We do really appreciate the clarifications that you've provided this morning from your point of view in relation to the stormwater effects. I do have a couple of questions to follow up on, and you've already had an entree into what those might relate to through my questioning of Mr. Murphy. The first one is to do with the stormwater management framework. Now, you have addressed this in obviously both your evidence and your summary this morning, and you do place a lot of weight on the importance of the framework as the most effective way of managing stormwater effects and dealing with the consenting process that those effects need to be assessed against. However, I note that in Ms. Bell's evidence, she does not consider that the stormwater management framework needs to be provided for in the design conditions. And instead, she suggests the process, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it is what has been reflected in the conditions, that the outcomes of the stormwater management framework are able to be achieved in the requirement to develop a stormwater management report. And the report itself will be used to inform the detailed design for key components of the stormwater management system. Now, I just wanted to check that that's your understanding of how you see this process working and the stormwater and flooding effects being managed. Is this is what's being proposed by Ms. Bell sufficient, in your view, to achieve the outcomes required for the NLR process?
Likely, but I, in my opinion, again, having the more comprehensive consolidated document would increase the likelihood of getting a successful outcome. My issue with this, the way that the stormwater management report was stated in the conditions was that it was quite limited and scoped to the sizing of detention facilities, more or less, which is important, particularly for overall site layout and design, but it's not the full stormwater picture. We know that now that stormwater effects go far beyond just flooding. We're concerned about water quality. We're concerned about erosion, any number of other things. So the intention of the storm of it, having the stormwater management framework in the conditions was to make sure that stormwater management was being dealt with in a holistic way from the very beginning. Because it's one of those things that can be very tricky to shoehorn in things once certain decisions have been made with layout and design, particularly after the site's starting to be constructed. You can't just hit delete and move your rails around or lift up a building and move it around and over there. I think Nick's trying to pass me something.
The condition.
Yes.
I think the important thing is stormwater shouldn't be an afterthought, and there shouldn't be any compromise, and that's why we feel that this holistic framework at the beginning that considers all of the risks and other elements associated with the freight hub site should be addressed at the beginning and not piecemeal.
Right.
And that's in agreement with how council has been dealing with stormwater lately, is trying to have this overall master plan and understand the implications at the beginning.
Thank you. So the council's preferred approach would be to provide for the stormwater management framework within the conditions of the NLR. Is that correct?
Yes. Again, acknowledging that there is a bit of jurisdictional overlap, and while we do have a lot of interest in the district plan that covers various elements of stormwater management, it's actually not too clear how PNCC would actually be involved in the permitting of the actual stormwater management system of the freight hub site moving forward, because it's discharging directly into a Horizons Regional Council managed system. Preface myself that I'm not a planner or a legal expert by any stretch of the imagination, but from a strictly technical point of view, I would love to see a comprehensive framework document. However, the conditions that we've landed on should, again, bring us to roughly the same location. It just might be a bit more of a windy path to get there.
Right, you say roughly the same location, and before I think I heard you say this pathway was likely to achieve the same or similar outcomes as would be the case with the stormwater management framework included within the designation conditions. Are you able to provide some quantification of what you mean by that? What is the degree of difference here, the magnitude between having the framework in or not?
That's a really good question. that's interesting.
I think what Al Nahi has submitted is conservative, and we're comfortable that I think it's more just a matter of rework and extra money spent to redo things if they do it the way that they're proposing. So it's not like the outcomes won't be met. It'll just be inefficient.
Part of the origin of our concern was in the very sort of original set of conditions that we looked at, a year plus ago. The second deliverable, the Stormwater Management and Monitoring Plan, which includes many of the details about how treatment is to be undertaken, had originally been proposed to be submitted prior to construction, which to me opens up quite a long period of time between the NOR and when they would have to submit that document, that you think you have it all sorted with the detention ponds and the flood mitigation, and then you realize that, oh, actually your water quality system's not going to work, and it requires some wholesale revisions to the plan. That aspect of the condition has since been removed. So, again, the information is more or less all there. It's just fragmented into different reports, and I don't necessarily agree that it should be. But, again, as Reiko just mentioned now, Mr. Lee has been quite conservative, and we're confident that that the area is available to achieve our stormwater outcomes and mitigate effects.
Okay, thank you for that. I do note too that the council planning evidence relies on your advice in this respect, in terms of there being sufficient land that's been accommodated within the designation extent for flood mitigation purposes and stormwater management. Is your advice based on the assumption that the NEIZ rules will not be applied to the whole of the designation site?
I think application of the NEIZ rules in particular won't have too big of an effect. I think the things that really drive the stormwater management criteria are already in the engineering standards for land development, such as level of service for conveyance and detention, as well as the expectations of Horizons Regional Council under their one plan. But if the NEIZ stormwater criteria were to be applied in a fairly draconian manner, there might be issues with respect to the allocation of 10% of the site open space for the purpose of stormwater retention. I haven't done the calculus on KiwiRail's proposed plan at this point, but it might need a few things adjusted here and there. However, I don't think that requirement is necessarily critical to achieve a satisfactory stormwater outcome.
But isn't KiwiRail required, as Mr. Murphy alluded to before, to demonstrate that they can address both downstream and upstream effects from stormwater and flood control measures within the designation site?
I believe so. From an RMA perspective, Nick, would that be right? Yes.
So if there are some adjustments that need to be made, as you were referring to a moment ago, should a draconian approach be taken to the rules that might apply to stormwater and flood control over the entirety of the designation site, and it turns out that there isn't sufficient land that's been accommodated within the site to deal with those effects, what would your position be then?
Again, from a technical perspective, I wouldn't expect that we would go that direction, but you're right. If we are going to hold them to that 10%, if the NEIZ zoning is extended to the entirety of the freight hub site rather than the kind of southern portion of it as it is now, there are likely measures that could be done. And a lot of stormwater quality measures can be co-located with other features and either buried or put alongside road reserves, et cetera, stuff like that, that don't take up a large footprint.
What do you think, Rico?
I would say a simple solution would be if they can't achieve the for instance, the 10% set aside of impervious or pervious surfaces, they would have to adopt something like green roofs. And then they can tick that box. So there are engineering solutions that are available based on what they want to do.
My apologies for my lack of understanding of the technical aspects. What were you referring to just there in terms of, was it green roofs?
Yeah, so I guess instead of having a pervious open land area, which you could adopt on some of the roofs of the buildings, you could install a green roof, which would function more like a pervious surface. Because to be honest, in the freight hub area, there's the whole site is going to be engineered fill up sometime, in some places several meters from where it is now. And that kind of compacted engineered fill doesn't really make the great kind of pervious surface that we'd want for a stormwater balance anyways. So there are limitations with respect to the site regardless.
I understand that. All right, thank you for that response. One further question in relation to this issue. In your original evidence, you do highlight the fact that you have some concern about the lack of robust assessment being provided in terms of the potential for erosion in downstream watercourses, and particularly in relation to the Mangaone stream catchment. Now, recognising that the detailed design is going to be really important in dealing with these effects further down track during the regional consenting process, to what extent, I guess, do you think that, let me rephrase that. Given that robust assessment hasn't been provided at this stage of the NOR process, how is it possible without this to assess, I guess, the downstream effects?
It would be on the assumption that an engineering solution could be provided in the event that a detailed erosion assessment did show that there was a problem. Because the solution to that erosion assessment, if you find an unfavorable situation downstream, is to provide more storage. And in that case, we could see about expanding the ponds within the NOR area, but really it would be down to buried chambers or other sort of similar things that could be worked into the existing footprint of the site. So there are engineering solutions that could be done within the footprint is basically where we landed.
Okay.
I think a lot of what we flagged with the original evidence is just identifying what would need to be considered in more detail. It's just flagging it and putting it in writing so it doesn't get forget, so they don't forget about it in the future. It's not necessarily what we need to see right now, and it won't affect the NOR, but it just things that need to be considered.
Yeah, we've had to walk that fine NOR versus design line as engineers. You know, we want all the details, but understand that this is where we're at in the current process. And
thank you. I think there's one last question. In your paragraphs 12 and 13 from your summary today, where you've talked about flooding and erosion effects, and you've mentioned the jurisdictional overlap, of course, and then you go on to say that you will have trust that this matter will be resolved through regional consents, and we're talking about matters relating to both erosion and flooding concerns, as I've just mentioned. I mean, are you on what basis do you place that trust? And are you, do you think that it is sufficient for the panel to operate on a basis of trust in respect of these, if you like, unresolved issues in terms of the NOR process?
I think we do have to trust that Horizons Regional Council and their one plan will be enforced, or that's the jurisdiction. There's plenty of scope within the one plan to manage the effects of a site like this.
I see.
And it covers the gamut of water quality, flooding, erosion, all of those potential effects that we're concerned about. So again, it's sort of to echo what Reiko just was talking about now, part of this is just making sure that it's in the record, and when Horizons Regional Council reporting officers and consenting officers are reviewing the body of work for this site, that it's not missed.
They will do their due diligence, essentially, and the process is there, the framework's there to catch all of these things, and we just have to trust that it will work, is what we're saying.
Yes.
Yeah, because
we
don't.
You.
Yeah.
That's really helpful clarification. I appreciate you both coming along this morning to help us to better understand these potential effects. So thank you both very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Mackinson.
Good morning. Again, thank you for coming along. Commissioner Pomeroy has asked some of my questions, but I do have a few left. Whilst we're at paragraph 12 of your statement this morning, and picking up that erosion effects and flooding and sort of trusting to the process that this will get picked up in the regional consenting process, was any of this addressed through your suggested stormwater management framework that you had agreed in principle with Mr. Leahy?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't have it handy in front of me, but Reiko and myself and Mr. Leahy put that together, that stormwater framework, collaboratively last winter, and erosion, flooding, water quality, all of that would have been included to address the effects of the site.
And how do you consider that those matters have been addressed through the proposed conditions on the stormwater management report and the stormwater management and monitoring plan? Or is that what you're saying? They're being basically taken out and left entirely to Horizons Council to deal with?
It's not explicitly covered in the stormwater management and monitoring plan, but it would be resolved through consideration of downstream effects, which they would need as part of the regional consent to demonstrate that they're avoiding or mitigating.
So in essence, that phrasing is more of a catch-all, and you kind of have to trust to the thoroughness of Horizons that they will consider the flooding, the erosion,
yeah,
the water quality, and the whole gamut that way.
The scope of the one plan is fairly broad.
Okay.
It would also be part of just the technical understanding potentially of the people involved in understanding how stormwater impacts downstream erosion. So in that sense, we're maybe a little bit behind as an industry in New Zealand, but there's definitely quite a bit of capability there. So it would be just making sure that it's flagged and peer-reviewed, or gut-checked, something like that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So just going backwards slightly to paragraph 11 from this morning, and you're talking about your concerns about fish passage and you have some experience, I'm assuming, based in Canada around that?
Yes.
Side, yeah.
And some locally here, just getting to up to speed on the local species, all that kind of matters.
And I appreciate there is specialist ecological evidence from Ms. Quinn, and obviously Kiwi Rail has presented theirs. The question I have is just around, I guess, the basis of your statement that you have concerns, given that we've heard from Kiwi Rail's ecological expert, Mr. Garrett Walker, the majority of the New Zealand species that he might expect to find in the waterways are nocturnal. So it's just whether you'd taken that into account within your statement, and if not, whether it changes your view at all.
Nocturnal is one thing. Absolute darkness is something else entirely, I think. A lot of fish do navigate just by flow. Like they'll point themselves upstream or downstream and follow the flow. That's definitely understood. The understanding of how darkness like this affects the ability of fish, or the willingness of fish, rather, to pass through these things is, frankly, poorly understood. But there is a general sort of distaste among many species for entering completely dark places. However, again, acknowledging that that hasn't been fully studied. The other problem that comes with having a, again, 600-meter-plus long completely enclosed culvert is there would be no vegetation or other sources of cover, food, all that kind of thing. Like the vegetation serves as an area for insects and other benthic organisms to gather and eventually, you know, maybe fall into the creek, serve as food, inputs of organic matter. It's not a natural ecosystem, which is fine for short lengths that fish can easily just kind of pass through on their way to somewhere else. But at the kind of length that we're looking at for that main central culvert, you're entering the range of fish being resident in those areas for extended periods of time, potentially. And that wouldn't be a suitable resident area.
So just for my own clarification, I guess, being an engineer as well, I'm thinking of solutions. I mean, for me, you can put lights in to deal with the total dark. I'm sure fish wouldn't want all the nice little sparklies, but we could address that. But essentially what you're saying is that food would be likely to be the issue.
And there, and Justine Quinn will likely have a lot more to say about this, but there will be drift from downstream. Benthics will live in that portion of the stream, but perhaps not as richly as it would be if it were a natural stream. And that's to be understood. It's in a big box culvert. And that's fine, except for the extended lengths that we're looking at. That's all. And the lighting is actually a big problem in a lot of areas. And there's been some ideas of, you know, sun tubes or just stringing LED lights or something along, having a little disco ball or something. But it gets to the point of practicality, and there hasn't really been a ton of good solutions, to be honest.
No, I appreciate that. So I do have two other questions. One was a question I asked of Mr. Leahy quite some time ago now, it feels like, and that was around the potential of stormwater capture in relation to the Palmerston North City Council main water bore adjacent to the site. I would like to ask you the same question, really, around whether you feel the loss of 177 hectares of catchment will be significant.
In terms of recharge of the aquifer that the bore draws
from. Exactly. Yeah.
That was something we did note at one point, and I think one of the Section 92 requests, that was a bit of a gap in that understanding. However, the council bore is pretty deep, and I don't think the recharge that we would be getting off of the freight hub site would significantly impact that. Again, in my very off-the-cuff opinion.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And my last question was something that was raised by submitters, and this was around concern about future water quality going from the stormwater ponds into the Mangaroni Strain. And the particular submitter that raised the question was concerned that there would be a flush of contaminants out from the stormwater ponds. Now, I appreciate that if we have conditions before it will potentially manage that process. Excuse me. But I was just wondering if you could give us an overview of whether you consider that to be a risk and what general processes might be put in place to protect the water quality downstream.
The stormwater wetlands and other features that will be included into the freight hub design, which haven't yet been offered forward by KiwiRail, they're designed to avoid that kind of resuspension flushing of sediments out of the system. For example, the wetlands are sized sufficiently to have enough volume to be able to absorb that, we call the water quality flow, from the developed site without resuspending things. But you're right, that is a concern for an undersized facility, is that you would get this sort of scouring out of this very stuff that you're trying to capture. There are other measures, such as pre-treatment of the runoff before putting it into the wetland through oil-water separators, bioretention basins, things like that, to kind of help minimize that potential. And that doesn't really play a role in the NOR because that's just integrated right into the site design in the existing footprint. And will be, I think that'll be the main point of discussion in their stormwater management and monitoring plan, is how that water quality is treated across the site.
And we would fully expect any kind of hazardous chemicals, substances, stuff like that will have their own treatment devices, interception methods, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there'll be a whole other system to handle, yeah, you know, potential diesel spills in the rail yard, stuff like that.
Yeah. And those are all tested true kind of solutions, so shouldn't be any concerns around that as long as it's maintained.
Thank you. Thank you for those clarifications. I have no more questions.
Commissioner Sweetman.
Thank you both for your time. I have no questions of you both, but I will have questions for Ms. Copplestone in due course. Thank you.
So I just have a couple of questions.
All right.
But they potentially are doing no more than flagging something for Ms. Copplestone. Mm. So
this is a pattern from the KiwiRail officers too.
Yeah. So just be aware of that. But it's probably best to head that. In listening to you, I checked the functions of a territorial authority that includes the control of actual potential effects of the use, development and protection of land, including the avoidance of natural hazards. Mm-hmm. And natural hazards is defined very broadly as, and I'll just pick up the definition of natural hazards is, any atmospheric or earth or water related occurrence, and then it includes landslip, subsidence, sedimentation, flooding, which adversely affects or may adversely affect human life, property, or other aspects of the environment, which suggests to me that there is a jurisdictional overlap mm-hmm. in the stormwater space to a greater degree than I imagined mm-hmm. around development having environmental or property effects. So, assuming there is an overlap, the aim should be on integration across jurisdictions and agencies. Mm-hmm. Given that would be my present thinking, taken you to the conditions, I have some questions. And in particular, I want to ask you a question around your paragraph 6. So I don't know if you have the conditions.
I think I have them right here on the next laptop.
Yeah. So the version I'm looking at is the 13 August 2021, which is the offered conditions of KiwiRail.
Based on some thing. No, that's fine. I'm pretty familiar with what KiwiRail have been offering over this period.
Right. So I want to conceptualize where we are at this point of the journey so that you understand where we are. Initially, the concept was that the concept plan was an idea which would be subject to an outline plan that would then address things through management plans. Now we're at a stage where the conditions are looking more like the concept plan is the plan, and the outline plans are a refinement of that concept. And the outline plan will trigger the stormwater management and monitoring plan. So it's a slightly different framework than we started with. Now, given that, are we at the stage in terms of the information quality at a sufficient point to say, broadly speaking, the parameters of the concept plan in its stormwater design elements is appropriate?
Yes.
So there is no problem by saying generally in accordance with the concept plan from a stormwater management point of view?
Yes.
Coming to the outline plan, you have this additional level of refinement. And my question is, looking at condition 44, is that, in your opinion, a sufficient statement of outcomes to satisfy you that when you come to look at the refined stormwater management and monitoring plan, it addresses the issues that you think the council should be interested in, bearing in mind its functions? It's a long question, but I hope you grasp the intent of it.
Combined with, sorry, it's not scrolling very well. Combined with the stormwater management report in condition 37 through 40, yes.
And then following from that, paragraph 6 of your evidence, is there a condition that requires the applicant to comply with its approved management plans?
This is going back to that trust issue we were talking about before. I mean, would we expect if they don't comply with their conditions that they would comply with the condition to comply with their conditions?
No, or so there's a process by which they submit a management plan which records how they will construct and operate the facility. And normally there is a condition which says the approved management plans is what they must meet.
Mm. Right.
Is there such a condition in the suite of conditions?
In this case, a lot of these details, again, not, I apologize to Horizon Regional Council, but will be resolved during the consents, and those documents will be developed likely commensurate with the consenting process to meet their statutory requirements for the regional authority. In that case, a lot of, or most, or if not all of what is in those reports would also be part of their consent and the actual consent conditions themselves.
But surely if we're setting management plans through an approval process, there should be a condition which says you meet your management plans or comply with your management plans.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would have thought that went without saying, but you're right. If it's a risk of not happening, then
yeah,
perhaps we should.
And if there is such a condition, would that not address your recommendation in paragraph 6?
It depends on what's in the management plan. What specifically is addressed by the condition in paragraph 6 is that Kiwi Rail maintain ownership of the facility, basically. And it specifically notes that beyond just handling the stormwater from your site, it's also handling stormwater or stormwater mitigation required to mitigate effects from the site, as well as the operation and maintenance of these facilities. Because typically, for residential development, for example, the stormwater facilities would eventually vest into council ownership as a joint public utility. In this case, the stormwater facilities are servicing one property, which will be the freight hub property, and discharging directly to the Mangaoni stream. So there'd be no intention on the council side to vest these assets. And then, so it's just trying to make clear that there's a sort of whole of life care obligation for these assets to service the facility.
And that's what that amendment is trying to say, yeah.
Wouldn't it be better to have the stormwater management and monitoring plan require the life cycle management or operation, and then just simply require them to operate under the management plan?
I see where you're getting now, because the stormwater management and monitoring plan does include provisions for the operation and maintenance of the facilities. What is lacking there, though, is that operation and maintenance be required to be carried out by the applicant. So in terms of just making sure that that's established now, that there's, you know, the management and monitoring plan isn't going to be, we're going to build a facility and then council, it's up to you. It's going to be Kiwi Rail. You're going to design these assets in a way that you can operate and maintain and consent in a satisfactory way.
Otherwise, they develop the plan and it's signed, it's approved, and then they hand it over and say, okay, council, now you have to follow out the carry out the management and follow the plan. And this condition is specifying that, you know, it'll stay within their control.
I think I do recognize, though, some of the potential overlap in conditions, in that we're saying in their management and monitoring plan to develop an operations and maintenance plan, basically. So this is more of a clarification of what that needs to encompass.
Okay, well, that might be a refinement of 44. It could be a separate condition. But the point you make about, the road, that the alternative road would vest in the city, but it would rely on the stormwater management of that facility. So yep. There's a... And the idea is that the city council is relying on that infrastructure as a condition of accepting vesting of the road, in a way. Given the size of the road and that? Do we need to be explicit in the stormwater management plan about that roading infrastructure or not?
I think that's what's in sub-point three, stormwater from roading and other structures constructed as part of the freight hub. Any and all sort of design that they would do for their stormwater would incorporate these features because they're integral to the function of the freight hub. You know, whether or not these roads will actually vest into council ownership, I'm just assuming because they'll be publicly accessible, likely leading to these other, you know, distribution centers and whatnot that aren't directly operated by Kiwi Rail, so there needs to be some sort of access.
I think there's no doubt that there'll be roads. Yeah.
Yeah, and public roads. But it becomes impractical then to have those public roads deeply embedded within the freight hub site be serviced by anything other than the stormwater infrastructure that was developed for the freight hub site.
Okay, well, that's all. Thank you very much.
Hopefully I answered some of the... There's some... It's pretty tricky jurisdictional questions, I think, to answer.
Well, I actually wasn't even alive to how tricky it was until now. So there you go. Learn something new every day. Thank you very much.